This is Jennifer Blackburn, and you're listening to Farming on Mars.
Hey guys, this is Sierra Ware, and on this week's episode, I talked to Jennifer Blackburn, who's the External Affairs Director for National Sorghum Producers and the Sorghum Checkoff, which both have headquarters in Lubbock. I had the pleasure of meeting Jennifer and going with her, as well as a few of the other NSP staff members and farmers, to Washington, D.C. as part of their annual fly-in to Capitol Hill back in January. She's an awesome person to talk to, very insightful, and we talked about an array of things, from what she does on a day-to-day basis for NSP, some of the interesting new uses for grain sorghum, and their podcast called Sorghum Smart Talk. Jennifer actually asked me to be on their podcast a few weeks back, so if you would like to hear that episode, you can head over to Sorghum Smart Talk, where they usually interview people with a lot more knowledge and experience than me, but I was honored to have been asked, and I highly recommend their podcast. So please go check that out. So let's go ahead and jump into this week's episode.
My name is Jennifer Blackburn, and I'm External Affairs Director for National Sorghum Producers and the United Sorghum Checkoff Program. I've been working here for almost 9 years now. In this current role, I kind of oversee communications for both of the organizations and make sure we have a consistent message and a collective voice that comes from our entities, and just making sure that the day-to-day activities as far as communications goes reflect what we're trying to do and accomplish as an organization, and we support the different program areas. So obviously on the association side, that's through legislative and regulatory affairs, and then on the checkoff side, through market development, education, and promotion. So I grew up on a farm and ranch in East Central New Mexico. My family raises cattle and show lambs, and then we also have wheat and sorghum and hay crops, in addition to grass where we raise our cattle. And so I grew up doing 4-H and FFA, small town, all of the things that someone might do, just very involved and active in a lot of different things and organizations. Obviously, I showed lambs and steers, and so that led me to attend Clarendon College, where I went to judge livestock. And so Clarendon, a small college, 60 miles east of Amarillo, and went there. And then I transferred to Texas Tech University, where I continued to judge livestock and was on the 2008 National Champion Livestock Team at Texas Tech. During that time, I started off pursuing a degree in ag education. Had been very involved in extension, obviously, did some internships when I first started school doing that. But when I came to Texas Tech, I met my advisor-to-be, who is Dr. Cindy Akers, and she's a New Mexico girl herself, and she just talked to me about what I was interested in, and a lot of those items, writing and photography, you know, falling into the communications aspect, which really I didn't quite know was a degree option, but it was, you know, things that I was interested in. And so I chose ag communications and got a photo communications minor and really fell in love with communicating about agriculture and all of those different aspects when I was going through that degree program. So I actually interned for National Sorghum Producers my last summer and ending semester of college. I graduated in December of 2009. And so I interned for NSP, really fell in love with what the organization does, advocacy associations. And then in that experience, I decided to go to Washington, D.C. and do the congressional internship program through the College of Ag. That was a tremendous experience. Was able to intern for the House Agriculture Committee when Frank Lucas from Oklahoma was in the minority office, and had a really great internship and experience. That led National Sorghum Producers to ask me to come back and work for them after that, and I've been working here ever since then.
What is National Sorghum Producers, and what are some of the things that they do?
So National Sorghum Producers is a producer-funded organization that started back in the 1950s. At the time, they were looking for an opportunity to increase demand for the crop and then also increase the value that farmers were getting back for the crop. And so National Sorghum Producers started, like many other advocacy organizations, we're focused on legislative and regulatory affairs, and then, of course, education. And so really doing those things in Washington, D.C., and advocating for farmers in legislative and regulatory areas. And, you know, we have industry partners. We, you know, it's not, we don't just advocate for our members. Obviously, they're the heart and soul of our organization, but we advocate for the industry in general. You know, we're working on behalf of everyone and want to see the industry succeed. How that differs from the sorghum checkoff is the sorghum checkoff was started about 10 years ago. We just celebrated 10 years this last year. And the checkoff organization was started to kind of invest back into the crop. There was not as much investment that had gone into sorghum in terms of research as some of the other commodities at that point in time. So the checkoff started to do that, and from a crop technology advancement standpoint. And so we really focused a lot on research and different items there. When we first started, recently we passed a new strategic plan that is doing a lot focused on developing markets and marketing education and making sure that producers have both the avenues to sell their crop and the tools to be successful in doing that. And so it's changed a little bit, but it's, you know, research is still a huge important part of that organization as well. And so, you know, through research, market development, education, and promotion, the checkoff organization really takes a step at, you know, trying to advance the crop, giving producers the tools they need to be successful. And so while the NSP, the association, really focuses on legislative and regulatory affairs.
What are some of the things that you do on a day-to-day basis?
Not every day is the same, but, you know, there's the general things that we do on a day-to-day basis. So we're a small communication shop, small commodity. We do a lot of things in-house. So obviously, you know, everything from press releases to our websites that we have and, you know, updating information there. The PR component of pitching stories and trying to push out different messages that we're trying to accomplish at certain times. We do a weekly newsletter. We have social media, obviously. Just all of the things in the gamut of communications we do in-house. And so that is a big portion of what we do on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, there's different things that we do throughout different times of the year. Whether that's surrounding events or, you know, things going on in Congress or, you know, whatever the current issues are, there are a lot of different things that revolve around that as well. And so really we just act as a support system for the rest of our staff and, you know, the different things that we're trying to accomplish and make sure that we are communicating the sort of messages that we're trying to get across at that time. And so making sure that's consistent and collective and that we are doing a good job of representing our producers and providing them the information they need to be successful as well.
What are some of the uses of sorghum, especially some of the newer uses that have been opening up in the domestic market?
So when people think of sorghum, the most common thing that they think about is livestock feed. And certainly the livestock industry has been a large component of, you know, sorghum use for a long time. And traditionally, our breakout is a third ethanol, a third livestock feed, and a third exports. Most recently, our export number has been up a bit. You know, in 2015, China was purchasing almost 90%, 80 to 90% of our crop. And so obviously a huge portion of what we produced here in the U.S. was going toward the export market. And in China, that was being utilized for swine feed, duck feed, and then also baijiu production, which is one of the most common liquors in the world. And so that really took up a lot of our crop. Obviously, with the trade challenges that we've been experiencing with China, that has changed a little bit. They've reduced the amount of sorghum that they were purchasing. Actually, it came to a halt last summer. But just in the last 2 weeks, they've purchased two different containers of sorghum. So hopefully we see that, you know, that trade situation start to thaw a little bit, and hopefully sorghum starts going back into China. But obviously we're still closely watching that. And, you know, our executive director and chairwoman are over there in China right now, talking to our end users and buyers, and seeing what opportunities might exist to be selling sorghum into China again. As far as common uses, you know, we have a lot of domestic markets as well. Pet food is one of those markets that consumes a lot of sorghum. Not as much, you know, relative to ethanol and exports, but it is a portion of our crop that is a high value use. There has been a growing trend for sorghum from a consumer standpoint, from a human food consumption standpoint here lately. About 5% of our crop goes into human food consumption. And so we have really been focused on pushing sorghum as, you know, it's an ancient grain. People love whole grains and the different nutrients that that provides. You know, sorghum is very high in antioxidants, and it's got a lot of different nutritional attributes that people want in their diets. And so sorghum is also naturally gluten-free. And so we like that it can benefit those who have celiac disease or gluten intolerance. It's safe for those people. And so it's got a lot of attributes that are working well and helping us advance it in the consumer food industry. Ethanol is a huge portion of our crop. And, you know, when China stopped buying sorghum, ethanol really stepped in and consumed a lot of sorghum within the country. You know, our primary ethanol plants are located in the Kansas region. We do have some here in the Texas Panhandle as well, but primarily in Kansas. And sorghum is interchangeable with corn. And so ethanol really stepped in and used a lot of sorghum when that China situation happened for us. Otherwise, there's still livestock feeding operations that are using it here in the U.S. other than cattle. So we are really working from a regional aspect in the Southeast region for ducks and poultry and even like game birds. So quail plantations and things like that. There's starting to be some more outfits like that that are using sorghum as well. And so and swine feed on the East Coast has been an opportunity for us in the past. So we're working in a lot of different areas, and there's new uses all the time and different places where we're discovering that sorghum's being utilized. So yes, we've had a huge focus on international markets in the past, but I would say our domestic market development has been just as strong here lately too.
Are there advantages to working for a smaller commodity like sorghum?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things that makes working for sorghum so exciting is we always consider ourselves kind of an underdog crop sometimes. And, you know, my budget is not always the biggest budget and different things that we have to do. But that I think that keeps us eager and it keeps us creative. And we always say that we do a lot with a little around here. And you know, our staff is so hardworking and so passionate that it just makes it a really great place to work. And you see the values of the people that are here, and that's staff and our board members both, you know. Everybody is really passionate about what they do and works really hard. And so, yeah, I think there's definitely advantages to being a small commodity sometimes. It can be challenging and frustrating, but at the same time, we work really hard, and it's exciting to see the passion from different people.
Do you see grain sorghum playing a bigger role on the South Plains in the future?
So certainly, I think there's a place for sorghum on the High Plains and in the Lubbock area. Certainly, we acknowledge we are in the heart of the Cotton Belt. But I think there's advantages to having sorghum as well. You know, sorghum is a water sipping crop. And so in an area that water can be a challenge, and we see that every day that the wind blows here in West Texas, that there is an opportunity for sorghum to contribute to that. And, you know, leaving residue in the soil and different things like that as well. You know, as far as markets goes, The ethanol plants, both in Leveland and Hereford, were opportunities for growers to go to. Some of those plants are kind of idled at this time. And so I think it's going to ebb and flow, but certainly I think overall, you know, producers can see some value in sorghum being in a rotation here in the High Plains.
How do you communicate agricultural issues to a wide range of people?
So I think as we see the divide between those who know about farming and have some kind of tie back to a farmer or ranch, and then those consumers that just don't have a clue at all, to be honest, you know, there is that divide there. And as we try as communicators and as people that work in the agriculture industry to bridge that gap and to make things relatable, so that there is increased knowledge and you know, less confusion and less misunderstanding about the things that farmers and ranchers do on a day-to-day basis, you know, there are different things that I think have worked for a while, and then I think there are things that are different and that have not worked. And I think sometimes we have to step back and try to say, okay, this is not working the way that it is, and we have to acknowledge that. This may not be working the way that we've been trying to do it for a while. What is going to be effective as we try to communicate that story to people that are not tied to agriculture and want to know where their food comes from and how it's produced? And, you know, consumers are more in tune, maybe not in tune is the best word, but they are more concerned and focused on those items than I think that they have been in a very long time. And so I think for us, as far as sorghum goes, sorghum's not something that consumers are really familiar with. I said it's 5% of a consumer market share in terms of what our crop is, and that's really small. And so I think that's been really eye-opening to me as far as how we're generating awareness for sorghum as a consumer crop. And so for us, it's just making it relatable to consumers. And so sorghum is very similar to things like rice and quinoa. And those things people, for the most part, recognize. Now, I don't know if my dad would know what quinoa is. But, you know, a lot of people, that's something that they can relate to. And when you put it in applications that they can understand, and then you tie in that kind of messaging of, you know, it's a water savings crop, it's an ancient grain, you know, it's gluten-free, so it has an advantage for people with celiac disease. Whatever the case is or the audience is that you're trying to communicate, that helps. And, you know, when you tell them, oh, it's a grain, you know, they're not going to necessarily understand that. I always try to have pictures available. I even have sorghum on my debit card because it can be a conversation starter sometimes. When people don't understand, because that's easy for me to just pull out of my wallet versus finding it in my phone sometimes. So I just, you know, that's sorghum specific, but I think as a whole, agriculture is trying to figure out, I think we're playing catch up in a little bit of a sense of trying to communicate to consumers and letting them know where their food comes from and how it's grown and all of those things. I think we're doing a better job. But I still think that we have a long way to go. And that's something that I look forward to as a communicator, is continuing to find a way to do that, that is effective and efficient and just helpful. And it helps bridge that gap between consumers and agriculture.
What are some of the ways NSP and the Checkoff communicate with others about sorghum?
So communications in general is changing every day as well. We're sitting here discussing over this podcast, which is not something that really would be on the radar for us just a few years ago. It's a new avenue of getting information out freely and effectively. And so a podcast is certainly one of the aspects that we've added to our communications portfolio here in recent years. But we have a lot of different mechanisms to communicate to producers, both through traditional means of media, and then, you know, some of those newer ones as well. And so we do have a podcast called Sorghum Smart Talk, and we launched that last fall. And, you know, use that primarily, the reason we started that was to increase marketing education for producers. And that would be one of the topics that we've received back that has been really, you know, of interest for our listeners and for people that are coming to the checkoff and the association, really, for more information as far as sorghum goes. We do have a quarterly magazine that we produce, so a print publication. Usually it's about 36 pages, and we produce that top to bottom here in-house. And we're actually working on our spring issue right now that will go out in mailboxes in the middle of April. And so we send that out to about 22,000 producers, industry representatives. But it's the only publication that is solely dedicated to sorghum producers for sorghum topics and information. And so that's been a really key communication piece for us. We also have a weekly newsletter for our members for the association. And then on the checkoff side, we do a monthly e-newsletter as well. And that is free for anybody to sign up if they would like to. And then, of course, you know, we have three really great websites. We have our association website, that's sorghumgrowers.com. And then we have a producer website, sorghumcheckoff.com. But we also have a consumer website that is focused on our consumer brand and education, recipes, cooking tips, you know, all of those things that people are not as familiar with, of how to cook with sorghum and what it can be used for and its nutrient applications as well. And so we have that. And then, of course, social media. We've got Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, all the things. So a number of ways that we communicate to farmers. Obviously, there are different events and items throughout the year. We just got back from Commodity Classic at the end of February, 1st of March. And that is one of our biggest information kind of pushing events of the year. We partner with the Corn Growers, the National Association of Wheat Growers, American Soybean Association, and Association of Equipment Manufacturers. So really you have your main commodity groups represented, and you're getting the best of their leadership and a lot of information that's available to farmers that comes out of that event. You mentioned DC fly-in, and that's our annual fly-in for producers that we take to Washington, DC, and we give them an opportunity to be exposed to the legislative process. They get to meet with their congressmen and their senators and, you know, learn the issues that are important to sorghum producers at the time, but also advocate on behalf of the industry. And so that's a really good 2-day event that we do. We have a lot of people in town that come in, and we get a lot accomplished in that day and a half time period. And but it's just a really good way to expose those people to that process, help them form relationships with the people that are making the decisions in Washington, D.C., and also be advocates on behalf of the industry.
Why is the development of young people in agriculture important to you?
So one of the things that I'm really passionate about in my role at Sorghum Producers, and I'm thankful that leadership here gives me the opportunity to do that, is giving back to young people. We're fortunate in that our headquarters is in Lubbock, Texas, which is extremely close to Texas Tech University. And so I get to give back to the department that I feel like I gained so much from. So we have an internship program here at NSP and the Checkoff, and I usually have 2 or 3 interns a semester, and just the ability to help guide those people and, you know, give them the tools that they need to be successful and job ready that are complementary to their schoolwork. That's just something that I really enjoy. My very first intern that I ever hired, she worked on the farm bill for the House Ag Committee this last go-round, and now she works at USDA. And I'm just extremely proud of her, but all of my interns and the things that they've accomplished. And I really enjoy getting to hear about the things that they're doing and the steps that they've taken in their own careers and the things that hopefully was something that we did right here and helping them accomplish their goals and what they wanted to achieve. And so that's always something that I've been really passionate about and really appreciative that I have the opportunity to help people in that regard. One of the other components, being close to Texas Tech University, that I get to do is I get to do some of the guest lectures, and I get to go back and help speak to classes or mentor young people. There's one class in particular that they call The View in Ag Communications, and it's basically a bunch of other professional women, and we get up and we talk about different things from interview readiness to, you know, how to encounter X in the workplace. But I always enjoy that because it allows us to give real world advice to students, and no better way to learn from those that have gone before you. And certainly a lot of those women I have a lot of respect for because they were sitting in that classroom when I was a student, and now I get to sit alongside them and do the same and helping those that are coming through the Ag Communications Department at Texas Tech. And so the advice that I would give students is, one, you know, do internships. I think that's a pretty easy one, given that I would never be where I am today working at the same internship that I did when I was in school. So do internships, be involved. There are a lot of students that I see that go through and just never really do anything other than go to class, but it says a lot for you and your character and you know, your abilities if you become involved and you surround yourself with community and good people. And I know it's nerve-wracking and difficult sometimes to reach out and make connections with those in the industry, but we are in such a huge agriculture area for those that are going to Texas Tech and West Texas A&M. And, you know, there are a lot of areas that are similar to this, but particularly for those tech students, we have so many resources and people that work in the agriculture industry right at your fingertips. And so take advantage of those opportunities because they can really, really help you going down the road.
What does agriculture mean to you?
I really think agriculture means everything to my family. We are a multi-generation family farm that started back in, I think it's 1913, in East Central New Mexico. And so it's just been, you know, the roots of my heritage, and both sides of my family have backgrounds in agriculture. And I wouldn't trade the way that I grew up for anything. Growing up on a family farm, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, kind of seemed like a pain sometimes growing up, but I really miss a lot of those aspects. And I don't think I had as big of an appreciation for that when I was growing up as to when I do now, and I get to go home. And, you know, my brother has gone back to work on the farm. My sister and I are close to the farm, go back and help when we can. Probably not as much as Mom and Dad would like us to, but we do. And, you know, that is something that, you know, I hope is a component of my future too, that I can be tied back to the land and to our livestock and the crops and everything like that one day too. It's a huge component of my life, and I can't imagine, as I said earlier, not having that that aspect and that tie. You know, that's how my parents raised their family and the generations before then. And so it's a huge part of who we are, and I'm very proud of that.
And that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode with Jennifer Blackburn. And don't forget to check out the Sorghum Smart Talk podcast. Please remember to check back again later this month for another great episode about the people of the plains. Don't know.